Hello and welcome to season two of Inforum's Meet Him podcast. My name is Terry Barclay, and I'm president and CEO of Inforum, a nonprofit whose work includes highlighting and supporting diversity in business leadership. The Meet Him podcast series introduces listeners to male leaders who share what they've learned about the value of diverse leadership in their companies and in their own leadership journeys. And I am just truly thrilled that joining me today is Nathaniel Bennett, Chief Diversity Officer and Senior Vice President, Head of Talent Acquisition for Comerica. Welcome, Nate, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Terry, and good afternoon, and thank you for all that you and your organization do for our community.
Well, I think I should say right back at you, because I think we're about to learn a lot about what you're doing to change the world there. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. So let's just jump right in. How do you define and communicate the differences between diversity, inclusion, and equity in your organization?
You know, Terry, that's a great question. And I get actually ask that question fairly often, as equity I would consider not to be new, but it tends to be a new discussion in our world today. And inclusion is also a new, not necessarily a concept that's new, but it's new from the standpoint of organizational structure and culture. But I'll define it as, when I think about diversity, diversity is fairly broad and encompasses many different areas. And the way that we define diversity is looking at multiple dimensions of diversity, things like identity, internal diversity, community, social life, and also institutional dimensions of diversity. Now, when we think about kind of the more common dimensions that corporate America focuses on, you know, that would be things such as identity and internal dimensions, such as age and gender and race, sexual orientation and physical abilities, et cetera. So that's when we think about diversity, that's kind of the more common perspective that you will hear. Now, equity is really about level and unleveled opportunities for people, you know, within your organization or within your community. So we think about it as, what are the gaps? How are policies and practices impacting the opportunities? And what are you doing about removing any of those particular gaps as well? So equity is, as I stated before, it's fairly old in our business and our practice on the diversity practitioner side. And I have responsibility for affirmative action programming, where equity is a foundation of affirmative action programs. So that's not necessarily new. And now when we think about inclusion, it's really about the harmony of diversity and equity. What conscious acts are we promoting within our organization to drive unity? And really to ensure that everyone has a voice and influence and opportunity to be a part of the solution. Mm-hmm. So that's how I really would kind of define it and characterize those three, the diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, if I could ask a follow-up question, do you think that people in companies are starting to develop a better understanding of these three elements? Is it coming along?
Yeah, I think I think companies have always had a good understanding of diversity, but equity, because it's equity, is a little bit more complex in terms of helping individuals be accepting of creating unique opportunities for individuals or groups that are impacted adversely because of policies and sometimes biases and things that may occur in the process. So it's a concept that's a little bit more difficult to deal with. Mm-hmm. You have to have a lot more discussion, and you really have to understand, you have to have the analytical or the analysis within your organization to understand where the opportunities really exist. So, Yeah, I would say it's it's equity is hard and difficult a conversation. You know, inclusion, as I mentioned, the harmony, bringing people together. That's the that's the feelings part, which is good. It's about culture and values, but you know, directing individuals, giving them specific things that they need to do consciously to promote inclusion is where the challenge exists.
That's really helpful. So let's turn our attention to gender diversity for a minute. What are the challenges and opportunities that companies face in being more intentional about gender diversity?
Well, I would say that I would say that we have organizations have made improvements on really driving and defining how to engage in the challenges and opportunities around gender diversity. And there's still a tremendous amount of opportunity, especially at the very top of the spectrum when we think about the opportunity or the available opportunities for gender diversity at the senior most positions in an organization. And when we think about in today's economy, you have some industries that haven't been impacted as much by the pandemic. And then we have others that have seen significant impacts. As those organizations, those companies are shrinking, those C-suite opportunities are not growing, they're contracting. That's one of the challenges. The other thing is that you have to be very mindful of is ensuring intentionality and having gender diversity in your revenue generating areas within your business. And we think about it in terms of ensuring that we're driving the best talent and the broad and most diverse talent throughout the areas in the business that are actually driving and bringing in money into the organization. They're kind of the lifeline. They're really kind of pedaling or steering the ship. So especially in banking, when we think about banking for a lot of years has been a primarily white male dominated environment. It's intentionally, upon us at early career levels, mid-career and senior positions that we're being intentional about succession planning and identifying gender diversity in those particular roles. And then lastly, as I mentioned, in terms of early career, that continuous focus on building that pipeline, what are you doing to promote your organization as being a gender diverse organization in the community? What are you doing to ensure that you have the right development opportunities to grow gender diversity in your organization? And then what are you doing to ensure that gender diversity in the organization has a seat at the table, has a voice at the table as well? So, all those things really have to work in concert in order to kind of face the challenges and opportunities that exist in gender diversity.
I really appreciate your emphasis on the revenue generating parts of the business. This is a conversation that we're having a lot these days across industries. Some of our manufacturing companies, what it boils down to is being in a P&L role as opposed to being in the part of the business that is seen as supporting those P&L roles, right. Whether that's HR or communications or marketing, really trying to ensure strong pipelines by making sure there's gender representation in those pipelines, in those revenue focused, core business function. So I thank you so much for highlighting that. So I'm so thrilled to have you here because I really want to ask you, what can a male ally do, because we know you are one, on a day-to-day basis to encourage and facilitate diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Yeah, that's another great question. And, one of the things that we pride ourselves on as an organization is for our leaders and colleagues is that not only do we provide you kind of the vision of who and what we want to be, but we want to tell you, give you the the resources and the ability to act and take be intentional about your actions. You'll hear me probably, I've said that used that phrase a number of times, but it really is about intentionality. So acting with intent and taking action is really important for male allies. Supporting the promotion of women and others in your own organization, so individuals that are managers or leaders, what are you personally doing to grow women on your team and put them in decision-making roles within your organization? I do this through really kind of developing and putting that key talent in unique learning opportunities and always thinking about the growth. So it's the walk the talk. I also take it upon myself, and it's really important for males to do this. You also have to be a supplier of talent to other parts of the organization. So as you grow your talent within your particular team, and you grow, you're an ally in terms of growing diversity within your particular team. Are you also a voice? Are you speaking out in support of this particular talent? Are you meeting with other leaders to say that I have this great talent on my particular team? I may not have an opportunity for her at this point in time, but I think she'd be great in the organization. Sit down with her for 30 minutes and learn a little bit more about her. That's really important for a male to be really be intentional about that particular focus. The other thing that's really important is to be an earpiece for diverse talent in the organization, to listen, hear their views, ask their opinion at all times, and really allow them to have that voice and allow them to be heard. Because a lot of times as a leader, as a manager in the organization, you are kind of thrust with a level of responsibility that's different from others. And part of that is to create that voice, remove maybe the guardrails or remove the barriers that may exist in order for an individual to be heard. So it's important for you to be a good listener and act in with intent. And then lastly, actively support and be involved in things like employee resource groups or diversity events. Seeing individuals there and them seeing you personally, learning, broadening your cultural perspective, growing to be a more culturally competent individual, and then acting with that intent is really important for others to see you doing in an organization, whether you are a manager, whether you're an individual contributor. That's really, really important in terms of setting that culture and the environment. So a male ally, you can do that as not, you don't have to be a manager or a leader, but you can just be a colleague, a peer, a friend in the organization.
I love, what a wonderful answer. I love the specific examples and the lack of jargon, because really what you described, so much of what you described is what we call being a sponsor. That was an element of what you described. Well, certainly wasn't the only thing, but I think sometimes we hide behind those terms without saying, here's what you actually do on a day-to-day basis to be effective, in that role. And I love the emphasis on learning alongside, because we are truly all on this journey. And it does so much, I think, to encourage the heart when people see that their leaders are acknowledging that. That's just wonderful. Absolutely. So being an advocate for these concepts, how do you build influence inside the workplace? And when do you know you've built it?
Yeah, that's a question that a lot of people ask, especially individuals that are trying to gain a foothold in the organization. And, I've always been taught by some mentors that I've had before in the past, and I live by it today, is that number one, you have to be highly competent in what you do. You have to be highly competent and effective in what you do. And really be a role model, because it's not, credibility is a big thing, when you're dealing and collaborating with people and also working in corporate America as well. So that credibility is critically important. How do you, the ability to collaborate and work across, whether it's your own group, your own peer groups, or across business units, you know, what are you doing personally to engage in multiple activities that gives you an opportunity to influence inside the workplace? So what position are you putting yourself in outside of what you do on a daily basis? Or even if you're working on a project or working within a specific team, what are you doing to create visibility for yourself is critically important. And, you know, part of what I do is one is that my role as chief diversity officer, you know, diversity is not a Nathaniel Bennett initiative. It's embedded into what we do. So I have to be an influencer really all the time. And part of that is I try to create credibility for individuals to know that, well, he really understands you know, his technical area of responsibility and expertise. He's open to hearing different ideas. So having and coming into conversations, collaboration with an objective mindset helps really kind of influence that individual to say that, hey, this individual is not really just about himself or herself. He's also thinking about the greater good and thinking objectively within the organization. And, you know, once you start to build that credibility, then you can start to impose your ideas and recommendations really on those that you're trying to influence. And the one thing I've told people, you know, as we've been building our D&I programming and working with a lot of our C-suite executives, is that where I know that I've actually created influence is when they start using my same language when they're integrating D&I strategies within their particular business. I know that I've connected with them. I know that they have taken that deeply. So when they start to emulate and start to verbalize the things that we've been talking about for years, I know that they have really internalized it and I've been an influence in their particular world. So that's, you know, you have to be kind of listen out for kind of those key things when you're working and you're trying to determine whether or not you've actually been an influence on someone or on a situation. But that's really the, you know, at least the way that I see in terms of when I know I've actually built that influence internally.
What a great example. And in some ways, we've really almost talked about the next question, which is the growing consensus around the business case for workplace diversity. You know, do you have any special insights on that? You know, sometimes from where I sit, it feels like we've been talking about the business case for decades. And, right. You know, it's, yeah. You know, and everybody intellectually nods their heads because it's hard not to nod your head when you look at the data. You know, how do you, any special tips about how you move that to from an intellectual understanding to actual action?
Yeah, that, you know, I mentioned it briefly in terms of talking about technical capabilities of your particular job. And what I've had to do, it's really about, you know, connecting with leaders in the organization and identifying a problem and a challenge that exists. So if you speak about, you know, diversity and workplace diversity from the standpoint of that's very gray and emotional, sometimes that connectivity is not going to happen with leaders in the organization. But if you talk about take an analytical approach in a more systematic approach in terms of identifying the issues really being truthful. You know, so for example, one of the things that you know, brought out some truths is when we started to look at some of our disaggregated data around our demographics in the organization. So Black, Hispanic, Asian, female, you know, what are we seeing as equity advantages and disadvantages in the organization from promotions to hiring to compensation, et cetera. And just put it in their face and say, here are the issues. If you saw this as a minority or as a female in the organization, how would you feel? So I did that to really create kind of immediate accountability to say that, wow, this is not an organization I would want to be a part of if I, you know, let this go on. So putting that in their face is really important. You know, the other thing is that we try to, our educational objectives around diversity is around broadening perspectives through education. You know, we don't try to, my motto and my team will tell you, we don't try to eliminate their personal history that shaped their own personal perspectives, because that's really important. But it's really about adding more perspectives to their experience that really helps broaden and create more objective minds for that individual. And in creating a more succinct infrastructure is what we've done kind of around education for leaders and colleagues to really kind of promote that central education, but also do it in a way in which they can, do that, take that education on a more elective basis. We had to establish the goal. So once we identify where the opportunity is, then it's our opportunity to establish what are our short-term, long-term goals, who's accountable, how are we going to drive and integrate it through the rest of the business, and then ultimately, what is the culture going to look like so that we can create the culture that's going to allow us to, allow us to kind of drive and diversify the organization. But the business case is what it is. And you really have to point it out. And it really has to be black and white from my perspective in terms of what's the issue, how does it impact the business today and tomorrow, and how does that distract us from doing what our job is to do, and that's to give back to our shareholders.
One of the things you said early on in the answer to that question really struck me, and that is you have to disaggregate the data, because I think what happens is sort of a human tendency. It's like, well, back in the days when we actually went into the office, we have to remember those with fondness. But when you go in to the office and you walk around, you see diverse people, so that can mask the question is, but where are they, and what are they doing, so that you can kind of pull apart what the task needs to be, right. Where those gaps are, and start with that, because I think we're all very focused on data and facts and, help us see those so that then we can see our progress. That's really great. So one more question in this section. Do you have a favorite quote you'd like to share?
Yeah. It's actually a Martin Luther King quote. It's not one of his more well-known ones, but it's something that struck me because my dad used to always talk about it as well. And it's life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And it's always stuck with me because it's really kind of how my dad modeled his life. My dad was very humble. Very much a servant to others. And he, I just saw personally in terms of my mother is an immigrant. She's from Antigua, and he helped really all of her family from when I was in elementary school up through high school, migrate over to the U.S. and live with us, in a very small house, and put his own comfort level. And it's more about, and he always talked about, your satisfaction should always come from what you're doing from others, not necessarily, you have to be selfless in your act. And, that kind of modeled in terms of what I wanted to do with my life personally, in terms of, I don't feel comfortable, with personal achievements. Yeah, sometimes they feel good, but I certainly get more out of helping others achieve where they want to go.
Ah, what a wonderful quote, and what a wonderful inspiration behind it. What a great story. I can visualize that. I can see that. Thank you for sharing that one. So, before you go, can you share with us a story about how you used, or maybe even a time when you wish you'd used, a key leadership competency and why that mattered?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that is really important for a leader is awareness and to act with empathy. And sometimes it's hard to do because oftentimes as leaders, you're thrust in situations where you have to make critical business decisions. And sometimes acting with empathy appears to show a sign of weakness. But where it really came out is, you know, all of us have been through mergers and acquisitions before, probably in our past life. And I went through one and I was faced with a situation where I had to lay off or over 30 people on the team. And I can tell you, having 30 plus individual conversations and, you know, having an individual, you know, when they, you're impacting their overall family, they're losing their job. It's not it's just a horrible experience to go through. And I had to just mentally prepare myself before every conversation and put myself in their shoes and to, you know, to be able to speak and communicate in a way that was empathetic, do everything that I could to help them, you know, continue their career elsewhere or other parts of the organization. I mean, that was a pretty trying time to go through, and to go through over 30 individual conversations. That's tough. So that's, you know, the empathy part of it, and being aware of socially how certain things in business impact people personally is definitely a quality that is a must have for a leader, in my opinion.
Sounds like your dad taught you well and you're living the values that he taught you. Thank you for sharing that tough story. Really, really appreciate that. Well, that wraps up our podcast. Please come back to inforummichigan.org for more opportunities to meet him, including the Season 1 library. And while you're there, check out the other virtual Inforum components, including Meet Her, a podcast series in which female leaders share lessons from their own leadership journeys and how they put those lessons to use today. You'll also find a growing library of video tips, virtual leadership development programming, and a series of virtual events. Thank you so much for joining me today, Nate, and thank you to all of you for listening.